Rock and roll. I got Jeffrey Donis on the Capital Razors show. What's up, dude? How you doing, man? Well, welcome to the show.
I'm doing well, Ruben. I appreciate it, man. I love the energy. Let's go.
Fantastic. I love it too. Capital Razors show season 3 brought to you by pitchdecks.com. This is going to be really fun. Really excited to dive into your story. I've been hearing about you guys for multiple years now. For those that are not familiar with you and your story, Jeffrey, tell me a little bit about your background, how you got into real estate.
I'm Jeffrey Donis. I appreciate you having me on, Ruben. 20 years old. I live in Durham, NC. My brothers and I grew up in a low-income household with a single mother. That could have easily been limiting beliefs and like my sob story, but honestly, we never really grew up that way. My mom always kind of propelled us and showed us by example that whatever you want, you can go get. So she was from Guatemala originally, came here when she was young. And that's kind of her background. But when we were in college, we learned about single family real estate through YouTube. It was mainly wholesaling that got us into it. As I mentioned, my mom is from Guatemala. So what inspired us, it kind of lit that fire, was our first trip to the country. We saw where my mom comes from. We saw that my cousins, my aunts, my uncles live there currently. And it's completely different from here. I'm not sure if you've ever, I'm sure you've traveled.
I've been close. The closest I've been to Guatemala was one of the biggest Mayan civilizations called Calakmul, which was connected to Tikal, I think, which is one of the Mayan.
I went to Tikal.
They used to be in war together, those two Mayan culture, or those two Mayan cities, at least from my understanding. I don't know if this has been verified or not. But.
No. I'm not sure. I'm not like a Mayan expert or anything, but I just know that I went there and we spent like 3 weeks there. So it was a long time and definitely enough time to kind of forget about how I was groomed and all the things that I knew and took for granted here. Although like certain things, like you having to flush the toilet with water, I don't know if you know that, but like instead of flushing, you have to dump water in buckets. And so I think of a warm shower where I was staying, which is where my aunt lived. You had to heat up the water on a fire and then take it into the shower with you. So I kind of just got used to taking cold showers because I didn't feel like having to heat it up. Small things like that really showed me that, you know, what I had here was an opportunity, one, but two, I took all this for granted. And I knew there was opportunities when it came to real estate specifically, because I talked to my cousins over there and they didn't have the opportunities to start a business because they lacked the resources that I perhaps didn't see at first. So when we got back, I was a college student going into my second semester of my freshman year. And we'd already heard about wholesaling, but we started taking it a lot more serious and started taking action. In the beginning, we were in paralysis analysis. When we got back, there was no more of that. We just started cold calling. We learned how to pull list of data. Fast forward 13 months in, I'll go into like the first deal. Ended up closing our first wholesale deal, which kind of inspired me to not go back to school during the summer. I was supposed to go back to my sophomore year. Ended up leaving, pursuing real estate full-time from that point on. Eventually, all my brothers and I left. But the first 13 months, we did about 15 wholesale deals. It was 2 creative financing deals. We were just cold calling it ourselves at first and then started doing different marketing strategies. Pretty much everything you can think of. We had cold callers in the Philippines calling for us at one point. And we were just getting all these lead generation and we were learning different strategies. It was going well. It was just so transactional. And we realized that we don't necessarily want this to be the long-term thing. It was producing cash, but Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and Robert Kiyosaki always talks about, you want to work to buy assets. The rich don't work for money. You want to work and acquire assets that produce passive income. And that's how the rich don't, you know, pay taxes, because they don't get taxed on the cash flow. And these are things that, like in our business, we were getting taxed because we weren't producing cash flow. It was more so income that was coming in from our business, but we didn't have the asset or the depreciation benefits. So technically, we weren't real estate investors. And we really wanted to be on the investment side of it, right? So that's when we learned about syndication, because for us, we didn't have the money and the luxury of being able to purchase these assets. And we read one book. I'm sure you've heard of it, The Best Ever Apartment Syndication Book.
Yeah, I got it. It's right behind
me. Yeah, that 100%. So that was like the first book we read. It started like set the foundation of knowledge. And we realized that we needed a mentor. We needed to go and find someone that we could partner with and leverage their credibility. So we ended up partnering in a group called Think Multifamily as well.
Oh, yeah. I know those guys. They're great.
Mark
Kennedy.
Yeah. So 100%. So that's kind of like the story of how we got into syndication. I can stop there. I'm not sure if you want me to keep going, but really it was a long journey that taught us a lot and we failed forward, but happy to be here.
Cool. Yeah. I love dissecting all of this stuff. Particularly, let's start with this, man. You're 20 years old. So you're one of my favorite, not necessarily you, but the representation of you, the 20-year-old syndicator that's taken down 100 units or any number of units, or the woman or disadvantaged person, someone with a ethnic minority, like this is a male-dominated 45-year-old white male kind of industry. And for anybody to come up and take stuff down at a young age with potentially some people consider them disadvantaged, others consider them advantages because they stand out, right? So like women stand out in a crowd of 200 men, they stand out very easily. And there, it's a little bit more impressive. Plus, I think a lot of people, because of the abundance mindset in the multifamily space, I think they want to help people. And as a sports fan myself, like I always typically, for the most part, root for the underdog. And it's very similar in this kind of business, because I wish I would have got started at your age or much sooner than I did, because I didn't even get into it till like I was 36 or 37 years old. And man, I wish I could have just, you know, saved so much time and energy messing around and getting myself to a place where I could create generational wealth much faster. So I commend you for starting at that age. Number one.
Thank you.
Number two, I'd love to dive in. Well, definitely going to jump into syndication here. Before we go down there, I want to go back to something that you said, because I spent 2 years in Mexico myself. 1 year I spent in Puebla, which is just south of Mexico City. It's volcano territory. I got to live in a little tiny apartment, or what I would consider a little tiny studio apartment, for like $200 a month. And like, I was like the richest guy on the block, because they had entire families living in these little studios. And on my second trip through Mexico, I was actually driving down the Pacific coast in September and October of 2013. And I got to experience hurricane season or cyclone season. And it would come through and ravage entire jungles and like flood entire like freeways. And I saw a couple places where I was stuck because bridges were blown out. And I would go into the communities hanging out, trying to just explore. And there'd be like Red Cross there handing out water. And like all people's furnitures were like out in the streets because their houses were flooded. And I got to experience, geez, man, like we have it really special in the United States. And I got this mindset of like, man, we do take stuff for granted, like to not live the way and have the same kind of conditions and have running water. And like, in some cases, you don't have to use like a bucket or something. Like anytime you take the smallest things as like miracles or like precious aspects, because the majority of the world, and particularly third world countries, do not live at the same status that we do. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about what you got from your experience. I know it was just 3 weeks, or maybe you've been back. What kind of effect did that have on you personally as a multifamily investor?
All of my cousins, they grew up with not even a third of what I grew up with thinking. And then I think growing up, my generation, a lot of people tend to kind of have the victim mindset, where a lot of things are not their fault. And they don't necessarily take control of their environment or their life or their outcomes or whatever it is. They always can blame someone. And maybe it's their fault, maybe it isn't. But for me, when I was there, I mean, I saw how happy they were. And for one, they don't necessarily have the opportunities I have. So when I came back, for one, that's the main thing I thought was my mindset shifted from, I have this opportunity. It was a lot more evident. And I think anyone that has a chance to go travel and live in a third world country for, doesn't matter how long, there's going to be things that you realize. And it's easier for, like, if you're listening to this, it's easy to just think, well, yeah, I do have these things. It's not the same as actually going over there and not having any of those things for a long period of time and kind of just ingraining yourself in that culture. You'll realize that you don't need a lot of these materialistic things. So then when it comes back, one, you're truly focused on the things that you actually enjoy, because you're pulled out of that environment. And then two, when you come back, you start to actually see, okay, I all these things I didn't see before, all these opportunities that I didn't see, now that I'm back, I kind of see, okay, well, I have such a good network. I have free public school in this country over there. A lot of times you have to pay for it. My mom, growing up, she didn't even go to school because she couldn't afford to. So here, a lot of people take that for granted. And when it comes to the internet and things like that, that we have access to, when it comes to the audiobooks, this podcast right now, a lot of people over there can't afford Spotify or things like that. So how do they get access to the podcast? Unfortunately, some of them don't. So that's things that I just wasn't taking advantage of. And then I started just becoming this person that had a fire under them. And for me, it's really helping my family, but also my family here in the United States, as well as family in Guatemala. I didn't mention this, but my mom was one of her only siblings out of over 12 siblings to actually make it to this country. And all of the rest of them, either for lack of, maybe they were just scared or just didn't think that they could make it. Whatever, my mom ended up here. And I don't think that was a coincidence. I don't believe in coincidences. I do think that was God and a plan. So I was put here in this position to make the most of this opportunity. And when I got back, I kind of realized that. So that's when I was in school and I just sat there thinking, and I was doing well in school when I was there. And I just didn't see my my purpose being fulfilled in the next 4 years, chasing after, for me, I was just looking to get a job versus going and trying to create a business. And I started reading a lot of different entrepreneurial books like Rich Dad Poor Dad, Principles by Ray Dalio, Think and Grow Rich, things like that. I slowly started to convince myself, okay, well, a lot of these people, for one, I didn't even know what a robber barons created universities to suit their purposes based on what perspective you're looking at it from. But I started learning a lot about why school was put in place. And a lot of people don't even go to school and end up becoming entrepreneurs. And if you want to be an entrepreneur, perhaps you don't need to go to school. So that's kind of what shifted that mindset. So when I got back in multifamily now, it's really just making the most of the opportunities that I have here and never forgetting that, like, I truly have things that people in other countries don't have access to. So I just want to make the most of that.
Rock and roll. All right. So you mentioned that you started a wholesaling business, probably with your brothers. I'm assuming you probably developed some systems, but realized through some mind expansion of reading, you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad and some other books that passive income is where it's at. Tell me about the transition from your wholesaling business to actually becoming a full-blown multifamily syndicator.
Yeah. So the level of sophistication, obviously, is very different. Single family, we were dealing with homeowners, and really that was the most sophisticated it got. There were some like title company attorneys we worked with, but other than that, it was just the homeowners, which comes with a lot of drama and transactions, and that wasn't what we enjoyed. So when we read the Best Ever Apartment Syndication book, that was the first step. That set the foundation. We learned about the importance of a thought leadership platform.
Yeah.
That's what kind of birthed our podcast. And then also we had the importance of finding the proper team and the joining the right mastermind groups and then finding the right partners who you can leverage. We started looking into, okay, we thought we could do it by ourselves at first. So we started cold calling the same way we would a single family property owner. We started cold calling 100 plus unit apartment building owners, trying to skip trace their numbers. And we were just getting turned down. And then we were like, okay, well, let's try the brokers. Same thing happened. So eventually ended up just figuring out that we wanted to find a partner who we could leverage and partner with. And if we did find a deal, they'd partner with us. So that would help us get the liquidity and net worth requirements when it came to getting the loan, as well as winning the deal in the first place, being able to leverage their track record and their credibility and all of that. So we ended up going on Bigger Pockets, and we were searching for different mastermind groups, came across Think Multifamily, and eventually pulled the trigger on that one. And that's what kind of opened the floodgates for the network, the knowledge, as well as the opportunities in regards to actually getting into our first deal. So I'm not sure if you want me to just jump into how I got into that, or
if there's something that you want to continue on, I'll keep listening, but I have some questions for you. So
please.
So for you. All right. So number one, I heard this from TJ Lockbaj, one of the sponsors of the show, Syndication Pro. He came on and we had this series called Tech and Capital and talked about how you leveraged someone else's track record, like exactly what you're explaining. And you were able to use that platform as a co-GP structure where you could raise capital, maintain your own database, and then leverage somebody else's track record, their experience, their background, and everything. And we're able to use that platform successfully to raise capital for these. I'm not sure if that was before Think Multifamily or after. So I'm curious about that piece.
Yeah, that exactly ties into what I was going to say. So I appreciate the question. So we were in Think Multifamily and they used this portal. I was a part of Syndication Pro at the time, but had never actually used it to participate in a deal. So we were in Think Multifamily, had a connection, a lead sponsor in the group that had a deal. And this deal was in Jacksonville, Florida. It was 100 plus unit apartment complex in obviously one of the hottest markets in the country. And I was like, I really want to be a part of this. So how do I bring enough value to this guy to be able to earn a spot at the table? And we realized that, okay, well, we called them, talked to him, asked him what he needed. They were looking for a few other co-sponsors to help out with different things. I mean, primarily for us, we're pretty good at marketing. So eventually just started asking him, hey man, can we help you with anything, whether that's investor relations and setting up the emails. And then also we participate on the asset management calls, but also we knew a gentleman who was in another group and he didn't know my lead sponsor. So I kind of just realized this guy has a lot more experience than I do. He has the ability to raise a lot of capital, has a big investor database, and he just has more experience when it comes to just bringing more value than us alone. So I asked the lead sponsor, if I make this introduction, would that be a value? And he said, yes. I ended up making that introduction. He was like, since you guys brought in this guy and he's amazing, I wouldn't have known him without you all. I want to allow you all to come onto the deal and we'll just figure something out. And we ended up helping out with the marketing. We get on the asset management calls. I visit the property a few times a year. It really went well. I leveraged that lead sponsor's track record through Syndication Pro. And Syndication Pro is this portal for anyone in your audience that doesn't know. is a portal where you can, as a lead sponsor, bring on co-sponsors and sync all the deal information, whether that's the investment highlights, the deal webinar, you have the returns, all these different things that you can upload to Syndication Pro. And as the lead sponsor, you can sync it to your co-sponsor's portal. So for me, someone who was brand new at that time, having a portal like that for my investors that I was trying to bring into the deal, they're like, okay, well, this is actually legit. Instead of me sending like PDF copies of contracts via email, this is all in a portal that looks very professional and it's all laid out there and very easy for me to just sync all into my portal from the lead sponsor. So it wasn't necessarily me having to do it all on my own, because if I had to do that on my own, it would have been very difficult my first time. So Syndication Pro, I love TJ. I love that portal. We still use it today, all the deals we do. And I refer it to as many people as I can, because I really do think it makes my life a lot easier.
Very cool. Tell me a little bit about your business model. What kind of assets are you investing in right now?
I live in North Carolina. We'll target NC markets like Charlotte, Raleigh, Durham, and Greensboro, and also in Atlanta, Georgia. 100 plus unit apartment complexes, BC class properties. Right now, after the Fed started raising rates, we started heightening our criteria. So now we're mainly focused on 1980 vintage and probably up to like 2005. We have a value add approach, as a lot of people like to say. So we don't necessarily want to go too old. That's too big of a heavy lift. But also we want to make sure that we're having enough meat on the bone to offer the returns that we're looking for our investors.
Rock and roll. All right. So I'm curious about the marketing systems that you guys developed back in the wholesale days. If you guys have been able to improve upon those, what kind of stuff about marketing has helped you scale in the syndication business? Because I think a lot of people, not all, but a lot of syndicators are really good at acquisitions and running deals and finding deals and managing deals. They may not always be quite as good as communications and automations and marketing. So tell me about back from, what's the difference between the systems that you created back in the old school days and the wholesale days? And like, how has that evolved into what you guys are currently doing? And what are you currently doing?
Yeah, I would say it's the mindset that we used from the wholesaling is what we apply in our business now. The systems are, they look a lot different. So for us, we're systemizing our investor relations part of the business, and also just communications. That's the part that we're automating. For us, the lead generation, also it's similar communication in regards to talking to the brokers. Mainly this looks, the way this looks is in the form of an email automation. So to answer your question on marketing, we have a lead magnet, whether we're putting out content on our social media platforms or going on podcasts or releasing podcasts of our own. All of those have lead magnets that will capture email addresses. And then our goal is to get them to sign up for whatever it is, and we'll give them an ebook, and it's free. And in exchange, they give us their email. Once that email comes in, we'll then add that to an email automation. And let's say there's 7 emails that there's a one goal, which is to nurture them, to allow them to build trust with us, to learn more about what we do, and to get to know us. So eventually they end up hopefully signing up for a call with me. And that's kind of their investor nurturing process. And then once I get on the call, I have a process I take them through as well, where I send them an investor questionnaire, and then also just some follow-up emails. And once they end up getting into our investor club, that's when the newsletter kicks in, just to kind of keep them up to date with our insights on what we're looking at, the problems we're dealing with, the deals we're doing, et cetera. So that's like the system so far. Amazing thing is, I think a lot of people in the space, they're really good, like you said, at the deal finding and managing. But when it comes to the marketing, something that I think everyone can improve on, including myself, but something that we've been able to definitely apply some of our prior knowledge to.
On the capital raising side, what did you used to do in the beginning, and how has that evolved into what you're currently doing?
Yeah, so in the beginning, it was just family and friends, which honestly, I didn't have, like I had a lot of friends, but my friends are like in school and people that don't have that much money right now, unfortunately. So for one, it was really going to them and maybe trying to get their parents to learn more about what we did and building those, on those relationships. But that wasn't as successful as I would have liked it to be. So we were just honing in on going out to events and meeting people in person, trying to build those new relationships from people that didn't necessarily know us before real estate, which has worked to be better, in my opinion, than the people that already knew me, because they knew me as this kid. So it's a little more difficult to kind of overcome that. If you're just going to build a new relationship, that tends to go better for us. And then eventually, now that we have that system, we have a very big presence on social media platforms and our website. We put a lot of work into that. So now the marketing kind of kicks in. And I always like to say, marketing is the first step in sales. So if you kind of set that foundation, and initially before they even get to know you, they know a lot about you, then you're already sort of seen as a credible resource and a credible person in this space. So we do that by being guests on people's podcasts or having our own podcast and bringing on amazing guests and kind of rubbing shoulders with people in the space like that. And that's how we've been able to really increase our investor databases by going on other people's podcasts and just getting the word out there, getting people to sign up for our lead magnet, and we'll put them in our automation and that nurtures them. And then they get on the call with me. I get to meet them, build a relationship, and hopefully they invest.
Yeah. So I actually read the same book by Joe Fairless, where I went right into the chapter that's about talking mm-hmm. about raising capital. And it said that it said, start an interview-based thought leadership platform. And I was like, damn, I need to start a podcast. And I had recently been brought on a syndication company, and it was specifically to raise capital. So I'm like, if these mm-hmm. guys want me to raise capital and I need to start a thought leadership platform, I might as well start one on raising capital and see how it turns out. And I just jumped off the cliff, not knowing what I was going to do, just recording on my laptop with no real microphone, no anything. And it turned out into and evolved into what now is a capital raiser show. So that's been a very exciting process for you. Tell me about the podcast. Have you been able to figure out how to use that to use it as a lead capture system? Because a lot of times people can create a big audience, but they don't know how to access that audience.
Yeah. And it's obviously we're all learning, right? I'm still learning. My brother is the one that handles the marketing, but I can see like when we get these people that are signing up for our podcast notifications. So when we release a new episode, they'll get a notification when they sign up. They're agreeing to get those notifications. And I'm seeing them. We're actually increasing on the amount of people that are actually signing up for those notifications. And it's not like they just sign up and that's all they get. They also get put into another automation that will sort of try to nurture them and get them to sign up for a call. So that's what I think the systems come into play. I'm actually just trying to get people to kind of give them your email address. In exchange, you're going to put them into some type of automation. And that's where you get that nurturing sequence that comes into play. And I learned a lot about this through Russell Brunson's Traffic Secrets. There's a lot of books that Russell Brunson talks about. He's from, I forget the company, I'm not sure you, oh, ClickFunnels. It talks about like automations and lead magnets and different marketing things. The book talks about those exact thing I just said, having a lead magnet, having some type of nurturing sequence that you can take them through, and having call to action eventually in that automation. So that for us, that's book a call. And that's where really, the sales comes into play, but it's not even sales. It's just trying to build a relationship and see if it's a good fit.
So what have you found to be the best lead magnet so far?
My first one we've had for the longest time was a playbook. It was somewhat of an ebook, but it wasn't. It was more so like a PDF copy. But we used to have these amazing ebooks. And my brother, he's like an author. He likes to write. And he's a really good writer. And he'll just write up these ebooks. So I know that's a little bit intimidating for a lot of people. But I think the more time and effort and knowledge that you put into your lead magnet, the more valuable it can be and perceived, the more success it'll have. But at the end of the day, it's all about like, if no one's hearing about you, then your ebook or whatever can be just as good as anything and no one will sign up because they're not hearing about it, right? So I think it's a balance between having a lot of exposure as well as having a quality product that people want.
I reference Hunter Thompson a lot.
Yeah.
In one specific thing that he said on a social media post on Instagram, he said, a lot of people are focused on changing their closing ratio from 10% to 20%. And really what they should be focused on is getting in front of 10,000 people. And kind of the stuff that we've been talking about is getting in front of people, networking, having meetups, mm-hmm. having a podcast, having consistent online communication, social media, and maybe creating webinars or a variety of other things, having a lead magnet. So it's like mm-hmm. a form, a touch point each time that they see or hear you or hear about you. It's like building credibility for you, which is fantastic. Yep. What can you say about the importance of being omnipresent amongst multiple platforms so that you can have the greatest amount of access to people?
Yeah, and I'm actually a part of Hunter's group. So I'll drop him. Yeah, I'm a part of Raise Masters as well. It's amazing. I love what Hunter does. His book's actually behind me. I don't know if you recognized it, but I read that book too. And a lot of the principles are exactly what I just said. So in regards to being omnipresent, I mean, we're on YouTube, LinkedIn, we have a podcast, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, all the platforms. And for me, it doesn't matter where that person hears me. It doesn't, even if on TikTok, like a lot of people don't think that there will be people that will invest, but I've had investors sign up from that platform as well as even if they're young, my goal is not to just be in this industry for the next 2 years. So if the person's 16 years old, they may not be able to invest until they're like 30. That's fine with me. My goal is to be in the industry for the rest of my life. So it doesn't matter the platform. One, I know TikTok will continue growing, but the people there are young and eventually they won't be. So you kind of have to think long-term in my opinion. But the importance of being omnipresent is just more people to have access to. I think there's a balance and I think you don't want to necessarily get overwhelmed because of the number of platforms. So perhaps if you can pick one and be really consistent and good at it, And over time, it'll start to overflow into other platforms. So for us, good or bad, we started with TikTok and we went viral a few times on that platform, and that nice. Started to trickle over onto Instagram and YouTube a little bit, and then LinkedIn and small things like that. So over time, those platforms start to grow as well. So if you don't have that much time, then perhaps focusing on one is good. But obviously, Grant Cardone loves to talk about being omnipresent, because that's where you're just going to have the most exposure, if possible.
Any tips that you got for doing good on TikTok? I've heard amazing things about using it as a form to access real estate investors. I don't know how true that is, but I've heard that it's an untapped resource.
Personally, I'll give some tips. So the most important thing is just being consistent, but there's certain hashtags you can use, certain trending sounds. It's not any different than Instagram Reels. The same thing for me. There's a thing I can say, if you're interested in just Instagram, maybe just start using TikTok. And then what you can do is you can download, there's a website you can go to that will download that TikTok. And a lot of people will post that TikTok as a normal TikTok on Instagram with the TikTok watermark. Mm-hmm. One, it doesn't do as well because the algorithm picks up on that. But two, it doesn't look as good if the watermark's moving around. So you can just download that as a video and then remove the watermark, and then upload it to Reels as if it's just a normal video. And then I like the way that TikTok allows you to edit videos. So you can download it after making it there, post it on TikTok, download it and using this link I can share with your audience. You can take the watermark off and then post it on Instagram Reels. And Instagram Reels is one of the biggest ways that we've also grown our following. We got 5,000 followers in a span of 2 weeks because one video hit 1 million views on Reels. So it's powerful. And I think a lot of people, they underestimate the importance of the following. One thing is to go buy followers, but to get real followers that actually engage, that's difficult. And it's also, if some person that doesn't know me personally, they see Jeffrey Donis, they hear about me on a podcast and they look me up on my Instagram, it's like another website. They're going to be like, okay, I want to check this guy out on social media, see who he is. They look me up and they see that, wow, they have a lot of followers. And oh my, they posted today. They've been posting every day for the last 2 years. So they know I'm consistent. They know I'm not going anywhere. They know I'm a real person. I'm not a ghost. So if they do eventually invest with me, I can't just disappear. I think that gives people some more confidence. And it also gets them to know a little bit more about me. I talk about my story there. I talk about just different mindset things that we have and just getting to really show my audience who we are. And I think that definitely helps in regards to building credibility with people that don't know you, but want to get to know you.
Rock. That's awesome, man. I love it. All right, man, let's jump into the lightning round. My first question for you, Jeffrey, is what is the best vacation you've ever taken?
Best vacation. I went to Guatemala, actually, with my friend. I went 1 year. My first year was the story I mentioned. But then 2 years later, we call him Gringo, but not to say it that way. But he's 6'3", blonde hair, blue eyes. We took him to Guatemala with us. And I'm sure you realize that a lot of people in these Central American countries are maybe under 5'3" on average. Wow. So they're pretty short. And he stood out, man. Anyways, we had a great time. I got to, one, hang out with my family. And two, I went to Antigua, which is a really nice part of Guatemala. It's a more tourist area, and just had a great time. That was probably my favorite. Yeah, I'll stop there. I've had some other pretty good experiences as well.
Very cool. All right, favorite book of any kind?
The one that's in front of me, I have a lot of favorite books, but one that I'm using now is Joel Osteen, The Power of Favor. I don't know if you've heard of this one.
Have you? I have not, man. I'll check that out.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you're faithful or anything, but slowly started getting more faithful as I became an entrepreneur. So that's the book that I recommend.
Excellent. Do you have any hacks for breaking through limiting beliefs?
One, start hanging out with people that think bigger and are doing what you want to do. It's very simple. You just start hanging out with these people that are doing what you want to do, and you start to realize that they're normal people. And two, you start to pick up on their lingo, and you start to realize that if they can do it, you can kind of do it too, and you start to learn from them.
Yeah, I think one of the greatest misconceptions is when people think about buying multifamily assets that are over $5 million, they think that only super rich people do it. And the reality is that they're just dudes that you went to high school with. That's why, and they're not any better or smarter than you. In fact, most of the times they're not, but this is a fantastic concept. How about this question? How long do you want to live?
I'd love to live forever. Yeah, forever, if possible. You heard of the people that there's technology that they're talking about putting you into this machine. So after you, your body's gone, your
machine's there. Cryogenic freezing?
Something like that. I would be unopposed to it. If I could be 100 or 200, let's say, if I miss technology and I can live forever, put me in a machine and let me be in the Facebook of the metaverse, the metaverse forever.
That would be fantastic. All right. How about this one? Do your spiritual philosophies have anything to do with your success in business?
Yeah, so I believe in God. I'm faithful, and I think everyone has their own definition, which is amazing. For me, if you don't have faith, then you're putting a cap on your happiness, in my opinion. I think there's just this one universal law, whether you believe in the universe or whatever it is. I think both go hand in hand. So the more of like abundance you live, the more you give. All these universal principles, they all come from something. And in my opinion, I learned that firsthand from my life, so I can only speak for myself. But for me, it just helped me become happier, and truly understanding that there's a plan allows me to live or with less stress. So that way I don't have to like worry about having to raise all this money. I just understand it's going to get raised. Obviously, I have to put a lot of massive action behind it, but not necessarily having to worry because I know there's a plan and God's going to have his way with it.
I live the same way, man. I love that. All right. So how about this? What do you love best about multifamily investing?
For me personally, I get to do it with the people I love to do. Everyone in the space, like you mentioned earlier, they have an abundance mindset. So I thought that was a coincidence at first, but it's not at this point. It's everyone. Like 99% of the people I've ever met in the space are like that. So that's one thing, but also the scalability, the project itself, there's communities behind them. It's not just, we're not only after money. We get to actually work hand in hand with our PMs who are direct on site, and they're working with these residents. And I love seeing that property just improve and improve the overall living conditions and just overall living experience for the residents there. And I don't think that's every industry that you're directly in touch with it. Like I can walk the deal tomorrow if I wanted to, and I can exactly see what's going on and how the residents are responding to it, if they like it or not. So that's amazing to me.
Yeah, you can make a real impact in families' lives. Yeah. Best way to raise capital from your perspective?
I would say just knowing the right people. For me, like I, even as a young person, let's say I have a deal, if you know the right people, the money's there. You don't have to raise it all by yourself. You can just find people that can help you with that. So just being really good at your thing, even if that's not raising money, maybe you can just find the right deal and bring on partners that can also help you with doing asset management. But obviously, if they have access to the money, then it's always about, like great people say this, it's not how, it's who.
That's a book, I think, that I just got. So
probably.
Who, not how. So it was recommended. I'm going to be reading into that pretty quickly here. All right. So a couple more questions. What do you love? I asked you something specific about your kind of hobbies, and you mentioned networking. What do you love about networking?
I love connecting with people. I think like there's business itself doesn't always have to be so impersonable. And I'm still new to it, so I don't know all about it, right? But that's my favorite part. My favorite part about this business is being able to go to a conference and just have really good conversations with really awesome people. And after you get past like the small talk, you kind of just get to learn about that person and really learn about what they like. And for me, I'm growing up, obviously, like I said, I came from a low income background. So seeing what real estate has been able to do for other people in this space, my goal is to get there too. So it's really inspiring. And just being able to surround myself with people like that, that are typically they're faithful in some way, or they just have this abundance energy, and that's amazing. And it's not what I grew up with. Honestly, my high schools, they weren't like that. So it's amazing. That's why I really enjoy networking. But I do have other hobbies too. I don't just network all day.
Hilarious. All right. Two more questions. Have you ever experienced a miracle or had a near-death experience?
No, thankfully.
Okay. And then last question here, brought to you by Shannon Amigo, one of our great listeners. What impact would you like to leave in the world?
Yeah, I want to inspire people. So like simply put, I come from, like I said, low income, and all this could have been a limiting belief or something that hindered me to achieving what I want. And I think truly if people just like step back and either surround yourself with better people, read different books, take in different information, you can actually figure out what it is you want to do truly, and not just do what you think is going to be the thing you want, whether that's for the money or the wrong reasons. Truly you can do it mostly at anything. People, maybe you can't be an NBA all-star or something like that because you're my height, you're 5 foot like six. But in regards to just truly going after whatever it is that actually will make you happy and fulfill you. I was listening to a book today, You're Not First, You're Last, by Grant Cardone. He said on his mother's deathbed, he looked at her and she pretty much said, if I could go back and do this all over again, I would. Then she asked him, he asked us, the audience, why would you not swing for the fences? And for me, that kind of hit home. And I was like, I don't care. Like, even if I mess up, I just want to go and actually do my best, go for however big my goals are, shoot as far as I can, even if it's the moon. And I really want to inspire people to do that because I grew up thinking I had to go and get this corporate job. And that was what my life would look like. And I don't think it has to be like that. It can actually be whatever you want it to be. So I just really want to inspire people.
Fantastic answers on the lightning round. I love that part of the show. Shout out to the Capital Raiser Nation. Thanks for tuning in. Please leave us a 5-star written review, and shout out to Legacy Acquisitions and our sponsors, Good Egg Investments, Syndication Pro, Apartment Educators, The Family Office Club, and PitchDecks.com. Go to the Capital Raiser Show to see our sponsors' deals. All right, man. So Jeffrey, how does the audience get a hold of you?
Yeah, so please feel free to check out our website, www.donisinvestmentgroup.com. And if you're interested in checking out our free checklist for people that are looking to invest passively in deals and want to learn more about what you should look for in regards to a sponsorship team, feel free to visit www.donisinvestmentgroup.com/checklist. And then you can visit our social media platforms at Donis Brothers on every platform, including YouTube, LinkedIn, TikTok, Instagram, and then you can check out our podcast, The Real Estate Monopoly.
The Real Estate Monopoly. I'll check that out, man. So can't wait to dig into that.
Awesome.
All right, Matt. So any last words of wisdom for the aspiring capital raiser or syndicator as they're scaling in their journey?
Yeah, I would say everyone has the same number of, you know, hours in the day. And for me, it comes down to the habits that I make. And that can be thinking habits, little habits. So morning routines, all these different things, it compounds over time. And that's something that I've been fortunate to, over time, just build and implement into my own life. And it's paid dividends and it's still paying. And I'm always looking to learn more about how I can improve it. But it's really helped me just kind of slowly and steadily get closer to the goals that I have and say even bigger goals. So whether that's reading a book that I'm doing it today or meditating or doing yoga or going to the work gym and working out, all these things I think are definitely possible. And it starts with your daily habits.
All right. Well, this has been a lot of fun, man. I really appreciate you coming on, breaking down your story and your brother's story, man. You got some really cool stuff going on. I'd be rooting for your success. And hopefully we can meet one day and we can get a selfie together, dude, and hang out for a minute.
For sure. I appreciate your time, Ruben.
Yeah, brother. Enjoy your day.